My top five podcasters, Chris Lambert, and probably myself, but this ain't about that. The Mundane Festival is where you're at. If you've been tapped in, you know what's up. If you're a first timer, hey, welcome to the club. The cost of admission is simply a subscription, then rating and reviewing it wherever you listen. Don't worry about change ups, the cast won't break up. Even when that $1 million contract show up, a stand up guy who's a stand up comedian with a stance on everything from food to media. So welcome to the show, please take your seat. Let's find out what he's got in store this week. Who, me? I'm Don Will, your opening act. Thanks for coming out. Please clap. The Mundane Festival. With your host, Chris Lambert.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, June 20th, 2021. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast listening apparatus. And if you're really into this thing, I need you to go over to Apple Podcasts, give this show a 5-star review, let everybody know why you like it, because it's simply the right thing to do. But if you want to take your love and appreciation of this show to an even deeper level, if you want to move beyond that friendship, agape love, and you want to take it to Eros, go over to patreon.com/mundanefestival, sign up, $3 a month, hours and hours of bonus content. Speaking of a brand new subscriber, I want to give a shout out, a very special shout out, and thank you to Veronica P. Thank you so much for signing up. Hope you enjoy all the hours and hours and hours of bonus content back there behind the paywall. This is episode 514. I have a super special, a brand new super special guest, comedian and now filmmaker, Jessica Watkins. She just released her documentary called Specialish, and it's out now wherever you buy and stream movies, wherever. So it's available. I have a copy. I bought it and I liked it. I watched it twice. And Jessica's going to be on. She's here. Well, she's in digital form. She's not held captive by me or anything. She's in digital form. The conversation that we had, and I'm going to share that with oh my God. I'm going to share that with you in a few moments. But for now, I just want to talk to you a little bit. Breaking the fourth wall. I'm recording this on Friday. I just got done doing some TPS reports for the week. I am in my apartment recording this intro. I got a big, this was a big delivery week for me. I ordered the Marvel Legends Disney Plus Wave action figures, and I got all of them that I ordered except for my Sam Wilson, the Black Captain America. So they sent me everything but the Black action figure on Juneteenth weekend. And I think that's racist, Hasbro Pulse, that you didn't send me the Black action figure that I paid for, and I'm upset. And I tried to call customer service, and they said, because of the holiday, we're closed. And I guess because Juneteenth is now a federal holiday, they closed. So they're closed. So I gotta get my Sam Wilson action figure. Gosh darn it. I'm a 41-year-old man and I need my action figure. So that's a thing. That's a first world problem. And I got my, I ordered a, you might remember that when T-Man978 was on the show, we were talking about, I released a clip from the 500th episode. And we were talking about the Galvatron figure. I had pre-ordered him and he came in the mail And it's a cool figure. I'm looking at him right now. And I had fun. I guess I had fun trying to transform him. I did transform him into his alternate mode. You get him in his robot mode, and then he transforms into a cannon. And it's a really cool figure. Like, I'm really enjoying the way that they put these things together. But they are hard to transform. They are not easy. It's like more complex than a Rubik's Cube sometimes. So the craftsmanship on these things are pretty fucking remarkable, like I was saying a week ago or so. Maybe I was talking about that on Patreon. But after getting these action figures from these Marvel Legends figures, this Megatron, Galvatron, and a couple other things, I'm done with toys for the rest of the year. Unless something else comes out that I like. But I'm fucking done, bro. I'm done. Now, if I was kind of an alt-right podcast, I'd have more money to buy these and indulge in these toys. But because I'm not, I am just going to cut it off. I think I had pre-ordered earlier a Miles Morales thing. Who gives a shit? But I'm into action figures, kind of. What else? And I did some comedy this week. I did the Bushwick Bears comedy show at the Stand. I did that on Wednesday. It was fun. I was working on new shit, and I was not. I felt like I had a good set, but you know, the new stuff that I wanted to talk about went over. I think there's shit that could be cut, and there's still a kind of a chunk of a joke of something, some larger thing that I want to do that's not there yet. And I closed with it, and I was like, what? Because I saw the light. I was like, oh, don't want to run over time. Don't want to be that black guy running the light. So I wrapped it up, and I said, you know, this joke will work one day, but it's just not tonight. So I've done it a couple times, and it's been... it's okay. Like there's funny stuff in it, and I found it, but I just got to find out the structure. And that's where the fun is, guys. That's what separates me from being the funny guy at the office, which I'm not. I am not the funny guy at the office, but from being somebody who can make some strangers laugh at will. So I'm trying to start from scratch. I have a skeleton of what I want to do. I have the closing chunk that I have already that I want to talk about. But that's growing. I'm evolving as an artist. And I think as things come together, it's ever evolving. It's never done until you really record it. Some of that stuff is like, I was like, ooh, I could have did this thing, but that's on failed running back. So I don't want to, I want to move forward, guys. But yeah, so I'm having fun. I'm glad to be back doing stand up. I have a couple of shows. I have one show next week on the 20th. Well, this week, technically, June, I'm talking to you on Friday, but you'll be hearing this on Sunday, at the Horseshoe Tavern. I'm closing out that show, which I had a lot of fun when I did it, maybe in 2019, I think. The Ritu Chandra show that she hosts down in Morristown. And that's on my link in bio on the Instagram. That's on the 24th, I think at 8:00. I'm going to be at the Brick City Comedy Review closing that show out on July 2nd. On Instagram, I think it says July 1st. I fucked that up. I'll probably delete it and then put it back up. But that link's also there. That's in Newark at the Kilkenny Ale House. I'll be at the Borgata on, I told you, the 18th through the 23rd, and the Laughing Fox Tavern on July. Don't let me lie to you. I haven't gotten all the information, but I know that I'm going to be there on July 20th. So there's some shows that you can come to if you live in Jersey, but it was cool to get to drive into the city and do that Bushwick Bears show at the Stand. Shout out to the Bushwick Bears crew, Derek, Boris and Jericho. They run a good show. They're good people. They're good people. And I had a good time getting to work out. Didn't see as many comics as I thought I'd see, but I saw some on the lineup that I thought would be there. But I went up kind of early and I had to leave. But it felt good driving into the city and listening to my rap music to get hype. And it felt good. So that was great. What else? I bitched about my action figures not coming. Not all my action figures not coming when they were supposed to. Happy Juneteenth, everybody. Happy Father's Day, more importantly. If you have a father figure in your life or a biological dad that you're close to, give him a ring, give him a card or something. Technically, I bought my dad a Father's Day present when I was home last month, but I sent him a card. It's not one of the cards that I think would pack a huge wallop that would make him cry. It might. I thought it was sentimental, but I got it at Target, and I wanted to go to this Hallmark shop, but then I looked at the traffic. I was like, I don't know. So I got him a card. I've gotten good cards from people at Target, but I think this one might make him cry. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I'll let you know. But so happy Father's Day to all the dads out there doing right. I watched that Kevin Hart fatherhood movie today. I think that's the best thing he's ever done. Does that movie have issues if you really pick it apart? Yes, but I made an effort. I made a conscious effort to not look at any reviews or anything before I turned that movie on. I said, you know what? Nope, I'm not going to look at the rating. I'm just going to turn it on. Because Kevin Hart was on, he was on doing interviews. I didn't really watch him. He was talking about cancel culture and all that. And people said, did you hear what Kevin Hart said about Kevin? It's like, Kevin, chill out, dude. Nobody's canceling you. You've continued to work. You're good, dude. Cat Williams had the best take on cancel culture. And if you haven't heard that, look it up. And it's like what I said, but I'm eons less famous than Cat Williams. But it's just like, get good, get better, write better jokes. That's all you got to do. That's why there's people that are professionals and those who are amateurs. And so it goes. But I think it's the best thing I think he's ever done. And I think it's a good, solid. It's just a good, sweet movie that almost got me, almost made me cry. I told my parents to watch it. So I think they're probably going to watch it today. Happy Father's Day, all that good stuff. So let's get you to Jessica Watkins. Jessica, I've been like, I didn't know her too well, but it's just like somebody that's in the New York comedy community. And I've just admired from afar from her undertaking this documentary and making it what it is now. It's an actual piece of content that she put her heart and soul into, and just the journey in and of itself is just like I followed her. I think I got Instagram right around the time that she started this journey, and it just had always just been like liking her photos and never really got the chance to tell her about how I admired what she did, let alone the film that's out now that you can currently watch, Specialish. And so I just got to sit down and talk to her about the process and a little bit about her life, and there's certain things that like I didn't want to discuss in the conversation because I didn't want to spoil certain things from the film, because I want you all to watch it, to check it out. So I do recommend this. I think you should rent it or buy it if you're interested in this conversation. And I think it's fucking cool. Okay, so that's why I asked her to come on the show. She agreed, and here is why am I being so defensive about that? Hey guys, thank you for listening to this podcast. And right now I want to turn it over to my conversation with the very lovely and talented Jessica Watkins.
I also wasn't doing Zoom shows during the pandemic, and I, you know, really embraced the time of, you know, not having all the outside pressures that we have of kind of the comparison game that we do. So I was just fully embracing this time off. But I also had the some distractions, like working on getting the film
released.
And the part that I was working on during the pandemic, because the film has been finished for some time now, was the distribution process, which was basically like I was doing the whole thing myself, and it's just a lot of signatures and paperwork and applying for things and redoing technical things in the film. So it was a good distraction for sure.
Yeah. And not to say like to look down on people who did Zoom shows. It was just
no,
like,
not at all.
Yeah. And I just want to make that clear, because it could be other comics.
And some people excelled at that. You know, some people became like TikTok stars over the course or whatever. Some people like were able to thrive in that time period. And that's awesome.
Yeah.
I think it definitely opened up space. Like I was saying also about the, you know, just our expectations of recording quality. Like it also opened up this, you know, I feel like stand up definitely when I started out felt like if you're not, it felt like a very like one way to do, there's only one way to do it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of like opening up into,
right.
I don't know. It's not so black and white anymore as far as that goes.
Yeah. And I'm every time I do these and I think about you, like we follow each other on social media and stuff like that. But I was trying to think about when I met you, and I want to say that it was around, I feel like it was around 2010. Were you in the city by then?
Yeah, that was right when I got to the city pretty much. But yeah.
Okay, because I know, like, I always talk about this on the show where, like, that downtown scene that used to be at Comics, and once it closed, everything just got, like, spread out and more things just kind of moved to Brooklyn. I feel like I met you. Oh, my God. I should have looked this up. But I think it was at Luca Lounge.
That would sound right.
And it was at this open mic, and it just wasn't the same. They used to do, and it was just kind of like the building was kind of falling apart. And I just remember meeting you there. And then I think the last time I saw you was like maybe Katie Compa's album taping.
Oh, yeah.
But you were talking to somebody else, and I didn't want to interrupt. And I was going to say, I was probably going to say, that's cool, your documentary thing. You know, you walk, because I follow you on Instagram and would see you in this experience and everything. And finally it's out, and I'm just like,
yeah.
So before we dig into the film, I want to talk about it. I guess maybe like in a nebulous way, cause I don't want to spoil anything, because there's a couple moments in it that are just really, I think, impactful for the viewer. So I kind of want to dance around some of those things, but talk about, you know, your life, leading up to that. You're from Nashville, Tennessee. What was that like growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Nashville and pretty much the city of Nashville. I grew up in East Nashville, which is like real hip, cool area now. And it was a pretty cool place to grow up. And I grew up next door to my grandparents, which you see in the film. You see my grandfather, he moved to Nashville to be a country music singer and songwriter, but that's not what he ended up doing. But he did do that like on the side. He came up with people who are super famous now, you know. It definitely reminds me of like the comedy scene. Like you don't know who's going to make it, but you might be, you know, there's all kinds of people that you're like, yeah, I was doing open mics with Michael Che.
I was going to say that I started with Michael Che and Michelle Wolf, and the big joke with Michelle Wolf was just like, just for me, it's not a bad thing, but I just remember doing a show with her at the Sidewalk Cafe, and she's just really just writing in her notebook, just like just scribbling hard. And I looked at her, I was like, calm down, Michelle. I mean, come on. And she's like White House Correspondents' Dinner,
right.
Terrific comic, but it's just like, all right. But yeah. So did your grandfather, what did he end up doing as his full-time job? Like we,
He was a trucker around Nashville, and actually he didn't know how to read or write really, but the trucking company that he worked for, the secretary, he would tell her these songs and she would type them up for him. Mm. And then they also paid for him to go to night school. So he like learned and taught himself how to read and write and started writing music. And he did write a song that George Jones sang, and that was like his song. And then he just had a family. And,
yeah.
And so, but I grew up next door to him. So we would pick the guitar on the front porch and he'd like tell me stories. And, you know, and I was talking about this the other day, like when I told him I was going to walk across America, he was like, no, like not, you know what? Like, that's so crazy, obviously. And I was like, but Papa, you have told me so many like crazy stories about walking here and there. And he was like, those are just stories. Like, that's like,
don't actually do that shit.
Yeah, it's like, that's a country song, you know? I was never in jail in Chicago. These are stories.
Yeah.
But he did kind of, both he and my grandmother, like them moving to Nashville was like them moving to the big city. They grew up as sharecroppers. Like, so I do feel like hearing those stories of them growing up and like they're kind of they're searching a little bit for something. I definitely think that sort of rubbed off on me and like wanting to leave Nashville and just like expand my horizons, which is what I did when I moved to LA when I was 18 to go to acting school. And so I never did stand up in Nashville until later, which, you know, as you know, like the scene there is awesome. And it's just interesting. Like I wonder if I would have done stand up if I would have stayed in Nashville. Like, I wonder what that looks like. But when I moved to LA, I went to acting school. And then that's where I really realized I enjoyed comedy and like I was more of a character actor. And I started doing sketch and improv. And then I did stand up for the first time. And I was like,
it just
felt so great.
What was it like in LA? Like, was there initially like a culture shock or what school did you go to out there?
I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Okay.
So it's like a theater training. And you know what's interesting is you go to a school like that, you don't know if, you know, how that's really going to impact your career.
Right.
And, you know, many people stop acting after they get out of schools like that or whatever. But and people go off and do so many different things, but the executive producer of my film is someone I met in acting school, like, you know, 18 years ago. And he's
talk about full circle. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's, you know, even if it, yeah, that's a really cool thing. But, LA. So, you know, I think definitely moving somewhere where you have a immediate community like school, you know, that really helped. So I felt like we were all kind of in the same boat. It was a lot of transplants and people coming together that were like young and eager and, you know, sure. Actors. So,
right.
it made for like a fun community. And I lived with, you know, a bunch of roommates that were also going to school. And I think it was definitely like, if I hadn't have had that direction and when I had gotten there, I don't know how that would look, but that was definitely like very beneficial.
I think that's true. I think you touched on something that maybe I've glazed over with the fact that each time that I moved into, well, when I moved to Chicago, that was a big move for me from being from Maryland, and then, which is suburban, it's the Maryland DC area, it's the capital region, but at the same time there's elements of it that could just be really anywhere, suburban USA. Mm-hmm. And then you moved, because I think when you're from a town, you don't really appreciate it until you leave, for the most part, to a certain degree. But moving to Chicago, which was like a major city, it would have been different if I would just move there and didn't have any type of community. And then you just kind of, you definitely build off of that. That is true. Yeah.
And, you know, the difference, like when I moved to New York years later, so I was in LA for 6 years and then I moved to New York and I knew one person, my friend Jesse, who's the executive producer of the film. He's the only person that I knew. And I'd only been to New York one other time. But I do think, like, by that point, you know, I had you've been in a city for a while. So it's a little different moving someplace. And then actually, so I just started doing stand-up when I moved to New York. And my this friend of a friend, like last minute before I moved here, was like, hey, I'm not going to be in my apartment for a few months because he's an actor and he was going to be away. And he was like, just stay there and pay me whatever you can afford. And it was in Soho, like on Prince Street. And I had no idea that that's like this, you know, really like fancy area. And it's also when you Google Comedy Club, the Comedy Cellar is like right down the road. So that's what I did. I just like Googled a Comedy Club. It was the Comedy Cellar. And at the time, if you gave your email, they would let you in for free. Mm-hmm. So I would just like change, like make a new email every day and then go, and then go and sit in the back. And I never even like really talked to anyone there, but just for like, you know, 6 months, I would just go and like watch comedy at the Cellar without kind of realizing that it was what it is.
And who'd you see what in that, during that period?
Jim Norton was like the big, cause I, you know, I don't even, looking back, like I'm sure I saw all kinds of people that I just didn't know who they were, you know, cause I was, didn't know that much about stand-up yet. But Jim Norton was like the one who was like, I know this guy, you know, right. I think, I forget what album that was that he did, but that was, he was like really popular at the moment. And, and I remember seeing him. Is that Jim Norton? Am I saying that? Is that his?
Yeah, that's Jim Norton.
That's like, a, or am I that's saying
a,
the actor?
That's a comedian. Okay. Ed Norton's the Ed Norton's the actor. Yeah. Was, and so that was around 2010, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you moved, yeah, because I moved here in 07 and then started in 09. And yeah, so that would have been right around the time. And then you just like you just started after that, like soon after doing it.
Well, while I was doing that, I started going to mics too. And Eastville was like the mic that I would always go to, and then started running a mic there.
Oh.
And did that once a week for a while. And yeah, then it just from there.
Just build up. Yeah. So what were you doing like for work? Like you, were you,
I've been a waitress.
Yeah.
I've been a waitress for like, since I was like 16. And so when, I got a job right when I moved here at this pizza place. And it's like the only day job I've ever had in New York is just for the same company. And they would kind of like, let me leave when I needed to, you know, my schedule was always really flexible. They were really cool. So that seemed, that was like a good landing spot for me.
Mm-hmm.
But that was part of the catalyst of the walk. Like, you know, it's a grind to survive in New York, like, and be working. And by that point, when I started the walk, I'd been in New York for 5 years. And you know, when you start, like you see, I don't know, you just get, New York is just such an interesting place to be doing comedy. Cause you can just get, it's just, it's consuming, right? Like, I don't know. And it feels good to get out of it sometimes. Right. And, and so I think the walk, that was probably definitely part of it, of just wanting to like, not really seeing my path forward in New York and, but still wanting to do comedy, but not really knowing where I wanted to be. And this idea of the walk came up, and I was literally walking all around New York, which was also like inspirational. I don't know. It was like, I realized that was something I really enjoyed doing. And I had never been hiking before, but I was like, oh, hiking is just walking. And once I figured that out, I was like, I think I can hike.
Cause I had a Subha Agarwal on a couple weeks ago, and we were talking about just like the business and New York. And it, you just, sometimes you can just kind of catch yourself being in a rut and just really like what, trying to figure out what the purpose is and what you're doing it for, and always like having like some type of goal. Like every time I do stand up, I like to have, well, I'm working on this set for this show, or I'm going to put together an album, or I always have to be working for something in my head, regardless of what's going on outside of me. Because you can just really lose sight and lose track of what you're doing it for.
Absolutely.
So in New York for 5 years, you move from LA. LA, what caused you to move from LA? I wanted to touch on that.
Stand up. I felt like New York would, you know, that's where you cut your teeth doing stand up. And boy, was I wrong.
Why do you say that though? Really?
I'm kidding. But I think it makes you stronger. But it's not easy in these streets.
Oh no, it's not at all. It's a, It's the thing that we do. That I was talking to a comic, James Goff, on it was on Thursday night, and we were in the back of the club. You know, things are coming back, and you know how comic, you just kind of have some of these philosophical type of shit that you talk about. And we're in the back of the club waiting for the show to start, and it's just like, it's crazy how this shit happens. You think, I want to do stand-up comedy. And you're like in some bar in Bushwick. It's an ambush show. It's families trying to eat dinner and somebody's parents are visiting. You're talking about your dick jokes or your, or yeah, your period or your dating or whatever, or racism, or, and it's just, they're trying to have sushi, but you're, you know, and then you get to a club, or, and then you get to distributing a documentary that you made. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's just like a, it's a fascinating thing how like the germ of a, the kernel of an idea, of a thought, just gets you, propels you throughout life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And that is a very philosophical way of putting it. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's so true. I think that there's a lot of things that I'm, feelings I have with finally having this film out into the, yeah, world. And things that I'm proud of about it. I feel really good about it. But then of course, you know, nothing's like how you, exactly how you planned it, and things, you know, this has taken a long time. And, but yeah, when I kind of sit back and allow myself to appreciate what it is, it's pretty cool, you know? And it was inspired by so many different other people's ideas too, that, you know, which I've thought about recently, of just, you know, and people have reached out to tell me that my film is inspiring to them, you know, and it's interesting also how those, like, that's all part of the cycle too, of just inspiring each other, I guess.
Yeah. Well, let's get into the nuts and bolts of this. Like, so you're 5 years into New York and in the city doing stand up, doing shows, grinding it out. You're working as a waitress at a, was it pizza restaurant?
Yeah.
It looks pretty cool. What is it called? Post. Okay. I got to check it out.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good pizza.
Okay. I need to get into it. Is it approved by Alexis Guerreros?
I don't know. I don't know.
You know Alexis, right?
Yeah.
I know he's a pizza guy. So I'm
not sure. I've been out of the pizza game now. So
Okay. That's whatever. Anyway, let's talk about the film. So what's the thing where, what's the impetus where you're just like, I'm gonna travel across the country?
Yeah, I don't know. It's what you were just talking about. It's a small idea and then it just starts to grow.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an overnight thing. It was a gradual just, you start thinking about different stuff. I mean, I did really feel compelled to do like a physical thing, like like hiking somewhere. I was like looking at the Appalachian Trail, or, you know, there are different trails around the country, but that was going to take me out of stand-up, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted to quit my job. Crowdfunding had just kind of started, at least it was on my radar, and I was seeing people funding things, you know, but for that, you need a product to. And I think that also was part of the film aspect. So, like, rewind, when I lived in LA, I met this guy, Aaron Huey, who's a photographer, now kind of famous photographer. And he's a friend of a friend. And he's really interesting guy. We ended up becoming friends, but he walked across America one time. And so that was just like a fact that I learned about him. And it was just one of those things that kind of sticks in your head. You know, I didn't ever think it was something I would do, but it was just in my mind. So that started circulating with the idea of this physical thing that I wanted to do. And so I was like, what, maybe if I walk to Tennessee, or maybe if I walk through Tennessee. And then I started researching it, and I started reading about it and seeing that people do this. You know, he's not the only one, like several people a year do this. There's like lots of books and things written about it. I called him, I talked to him. He was like, don't do it. he was like, no, he's like, don't do it. He was like, you should like do a walkabout. He was like, where you can take like transportation, but you just, he was giving me some other ideas, but I was like, I don't know. I really wanted, like, I just want, like, there was something that seemed so like meditative about the walking aspect, and just, I don't know, that challenge of it was very interesting to me. So yeah, I mean, once I started with the idea, it was like, well, if I'm going to walk to Tennessee, I might as well walk across the country. And also it kind of felt like that would be the most compelling thing for people to like want to get on board with the project. And so once that started rolling and I was like, okay, this idea just started growing and researching. And then I did my first crowdfunding. And I mean, I'm so thankful for that for so many reasons. Obviously, because it was the financial reason I was able to do the walk, but having that many people, you know, believe in you and like support your idea, which happened time and time again throughout this process, was definitely like motivation to keep going. And a lot of times on the walk when I wanted to give up, that was definitely a push in the back of my mind that, you know, people wanted to see you through it. And, yeah, then I made up like planned a leave date, and I think I slightly pushed it a little bit. And I remember I had a few friends that I'd made who had walked, so like people I'd contacted, and then we would talk on the phone occasionally. They'd give me advice, and I, you know, one of the women I was talking to was like, "Why aren't you starting? You know, why are you pushing?" And I'm like, "Cause the whatever." She's like, "Look, you're never going to be ready. It's never going to be fully ready. You just have to go." Like, and that was theme throughout this entire project. You know, it's never going to be perfect, but you just have to keep going.
And what year are we talking?
This is 2014.
Okay, that's what I thought. I just wanted to confirm that. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's 2014. And so after the crowdfunding, and I set the date, and then my friends and my boyfriend at the time, who was so supportive, and you know, you get to see him in the film, they all drove me down to Delaware, and I had this cart because I pushed a cart instead of a backpack, and they left me in this park.
They left you at a park in Delaware.
Yeah.
And what was it like, just put a pin in that for a little bit, what was it like when you were talking to your friends and family about this, like this endeavor of yours? How did they react to it?
You know, it's very similar to the other moves that I've made in my life, where I think at this point where my family not that they were, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't easy. Like, they weren't backing it immediately for sure. Mm-hmm. But it was something I just kind of tiptoed into.
Sure.
And then the more I talked about it, the more serious they realized I was about it. And at some point their fear about me doing it turned into, okay, she's going to do this thing, and so we need to support her in the best way that we can to hope that, you know, she can do this as safely as possible, which is pretty much what happened when I moved to LA when I was 18. And my parents thought I was crazy. And I was just like, look, I'm going to go one way or another. So you can either support me and like help me go to school, or I'm just going to like go be in LA. And at some point they, you know, supported this idea because they wanted to help.
Yeah.
Accomplish my dreams. And that's definitely an awesome supportive. I have a really supportive family, and that I think, honestly, I think that foundation for me of like my grandparents living next door to me, like I grew up in the same house my dad grew up in.
Oh, okay.
He's only lived outside of that house for like 2 years when he was like in trade school. And so my, like, it's just interesting how rooted my family is there. And I kind of feel like that's probably one of the reasons why I feel so comfortable being, you know, like moving around the way I do, because I have that base there. I don't know.
I think that's important too. Like you touching on really important things, especially like moving to a new city and then being rooted at home, like where you're from. And that's kind of how I felt a lot, because that I loved where I was from, but that love that your family gives you encourages you and fuels you to want more for yourself, not only just in life, but just to try to be more expansive with who you are as a person and the search for meaning. I think it's really important to, because a lot of times I think maybe my dad, it was harder for him. He's 80 now, and I just saw them for the first time, you know, in 15 months last month. And it was just kind of like, my dad was like, yeah, I never wanted you to leave. I thought you were going to stay. And he wanted me. I went to college. I went to undergrad in Maryland, like an hour and a half away. And I wanted to go to UNC Chapel Hill just for superficial reasons. I got in, but my parents were like, I'm not paying that out of state money. You're going to Mount St. Mary's, whatever. But I think that's something important that maybe did your parents understand? Did your family understand right away when you were like, I guess they didn't, but just like, I'm going to LA. Did they have to, I don't know. How do I want to ask you? I guess they understood it at some point, right?
Yeah. And my mom said that she felt like when they left me there in LA, that she really felt like I wasn't ever going to be moving back to Nashville. Mm. But I don't know that for myself. I mean, I Nashville's an awesome city. I could possibly see myself back there at some point, but I did go back around the holidays thinking that I would stay a little longer and like couldn't do it. But I think that had more to do. I think that had more to do with COVID and, mm-hmm. and going through what we went through in New York and then everyone in Nashville just like wiling out. I'm like, what are you?
So it was crazy. It was crazy down there.
It was crazy. Yeah. Like packed bars and restaurants, not a window cracked. It was like very, yeah. Like people smoking inside. Like what is going on?
There's a really funny comic in the DC area, Mike B. He calls it raw facing. just raw facing it, raw dog in the air.
Exactly.
It's just like it's so on point that it's just like, yeah, it's like, ah, it's yeah, like part of me feels like
all raw. It was mad raw facing.
It's just like one of those things where it's like, you know, as a country, like we've gotten through it, and I'm making air quotes, you know, but like with the vaccine and everything, but it's like it's almost like some people never stopped. They never stopped. Right. So it's like a victory that's kind of like, is it a victory? But
yeah. You know, and in New York here where you don't, now some of our mask mandates have been lifted. It's so, and then seeing people still wearing masks instead of like, if they're going to be speaking to a stranger in the face instead of raw facing, you know, like,
that's
very like, New York, my people. Like, it just feels like there was as horrible as it was to be here during that time, I feel like it was also like the people that were here, there was a commonality of the what we went through. And it, you know, going down to Nashville, seeing the way people were dealing with it was, for lack of a better word, it was triggering.
Mm-hmm.
I've lost, like, not through death, but I lost through QAnon.
Talk
like
about
that. Like a really close friend in Nashville, you know, and it was like, you know, exposed to COVID, refusing to test because thinking that the test was going to give you COVID. And it was just a realization of like, oh my God, we're like different. We've been friends for so long, but we are different people. Like, I can't even, anyways, where I'm off on a tangent now.
No, that's fine. That's what we do on the show. Like you're just saying some things that are pretty profound that just need to be highlighted. So when you were, you're in Delaware, what were you, along with the physical task, the physical endeavor, what were you hoping to get out of it initially? What were you hoping for with this whole journey, with this, you know?
Yeah, I think, you know, I, for instance, like my first crowdfunding video I made, I talk about, like I'm searching for something and how we're all searching for something.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, I was my 29th year. Like I do definitely feel like there was a sense of wanting to find this like aha feeling, you know, that's why we go on these kind of ideas of grand adventure sort of thing. So I didn't really know what I was looking for, but I was definitely, I don't know, looking for something that, and it didn't come, you know, it didn't come.
Okay. All right. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. but it is here it's not a light switch, I guess, is more, you know, it's a realization of like, oh, like this is just one of many other journeys that I will have in my life. And sure, those will all like build on each other. And there will never be a moment where you're like, yeah, okay, it all makes sense or whatever.
Yeah.
So it was, and yeah, it, there were a lot of struggles happening at the beginning. I mean, also I had never filmed anything before. So I got sponsorship through Black Magic Camera Company because they had a new small camera, and I didn't realize, you know, I was using this cinema camera. So I didn't realize, because I'd never really filmed before, basically the camera I was using had a lot of technical learning. I had technical learning curves that, as you kind of see in the film too, that I get stronger as a walker and then stronger as actually shooting and filmmaking. Mm-hmm. So there were like a lot of challenges up front. I was learning how to work this camera and film myself. I had trained for the walk, like I'm physically fit, but I'd never pushed this cart full of, you know, 70 pounds worth of equipment that I had with me and or gear. And then, yeah, there's like the mental part where as soon as you start, you're the same question that you just asked me. You're like, why am I doing this? Mm-hmm. And that's the part where you just, you know, want to give up every day.
Well, I think that's healthy though, thinking about quitting. Since we're there, you know, because it takes like your friend, one of your friends says when she drops you off, she says you got the biggest balls of whatever, like than anybody, any woman or anybody, like, you know, because I look at that, you set up the tent and then that is it the first night that it's raining the first night, right?
Yeah, there's a crazy storm. Actually, I was just reading because I have a blog that I kept on my website, and I was just kind of going back through it, realizing like how many typos are in it. But I was refreshing my memory of these things that aren't in the film that I'd kind of, you know, forgotten about. And yeah, that first night there was a huge storm, and I thought I was being like, you know, this weak ass, like in my tent scared. But in reality, I didn't know it was a crazy storm. And so like, there were like downed trees, like someone's tent blew away. Like there was a guy who stopped in the morning and he was like, I can't believe you were camping here last night. Like it was a crazy storm. Wow. You should have gone to the shelter. And I had no idea.
Oh my God.
I thought I was just being a weak woman. But I actually was just intuition.
Yeah. Cause I would have been like, oh my God. I can't believe. I would be like, okay, I want to go home. Go
but
back
I
home.
I did have my Real Housewives queued up on my computer. So
yeah, that was like, I was like, okay, I would have probably did that too. I would have had something. Oh my God.
Like my security blanket. Like yeah. get in my tent and just put on a Housewives episode. And
because you were all by yourself. There was nobody else shooting you, was it?
Yeah, it was just me. I mean, at certain points when I was in cities and stuff, I would give the camera to other people, or other people would shoot if, you know, if the timing worked out, I had a friend meeting up or whatever. Okay. But most of the time, yeah, if I'm camping and walking, then it's me shooting.
Okay, because I watched it twice. I bought it on YouTube so I could watch it more than once. But like, it was just like, yeah, because I don't think I could fucking do that. And man or woman. And you had other people there too. Like, it was just kind of like, I want to talk about this part of the film. Did you, it felt like, where is that? Where's my question at? I had it. But like, you had an antagonist in the film. You had maybe two. The first one was the guy that, oh my God.
Gary? Is it Gary?
The one that told you not, the one that tried to do it and never did it?
Oh, that's Dan.
Dan. Talk about him a little bit.
So Dan is pretty upset about his portrayal in the film.
Well, that was him.
It was him. You know, when he told me that, I was like, Dan, you're a comedian. Like, it's, you know, it's
funny. Yeah.
And I've seen, you know, I've seen the film play in front of audiences before and they laugh at him. Like, you know, so I was telling him, like, people laugh at you. They think it's funny. But when I had to get the errors and omission insurance for the film, mm-hmm. they basically go through everything and make sure, you know, everything is properly licensed and you have all the signatures you need. And the only signature that she wanted to make sure I had was Dan. And okay. I was like, oh man, maybe I do make him look bad. If that's the only signature, she was like, make sure you have one for this guy.
I don't think he was bad. I don't think it made him look bad. He was just honest. Like,
yeah.
In my notes, I called him an accidental antagonist.
Totally.
Because it was like he's kind of in your head, but then you still persevered, but it was just you kind of like, should I be doing this?
Yeah. And basically, so Dan took, he was on and off the trail and he completed the walk after 7 years. And the reason he kept coming back to do it was because he wanted that aha moment that I was mm-hmm. talking about earlier. And basically what he was sharing with me was like that didn't come,
Yeah.
And so that's why he was sharing, like, if you want to quit, you should quit and don't stay on the trail for other people or for your fear of failure. Cause sometimes success is like knowing when to quit. That's you gotta true. Know when to hold them.
Yeah.
No one or whatever. But, yeah. As I say in the film, I think he just wanted me to quit.
Right.
But okay. Dan was in a dark place then. Like he wasn't feeling great about it. He wasn't feeling great about finishing the walk. He wasn't feeling great about a lot of things in his life. But what's so cool is that he stopped doing stand-up, which is also a commonality of things that all of a sudden make people happier.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God. It's you ever see people that you started out with and they're just like, I got a wife, I got a kid, I'm married, I got a baby. It's just like, wow.
So Dan, he got married. He has a cute ass baby and he looks so happy. And I think that, we teach ourselves our own lessons. I think that was probably what he wanted to give up on, maybe, or I don't know, maybe he will pick it back up in the future, but basically he needed to like pivot. And that's what he ended up doing. And he's so happy now. It's really cool to see him. And even though he's a little pissed about his portrayal in the film, he's been very supportive.
I think it's fine. I don't think it made him look bad. I just think that it's funny. You do get a laugh there and it's just like a grounded thing, which makes your journey even better. He adds, he adds to the film. Was he in Delaware or Maryland? Where was he?
He came and met me in, I was in West Virginia by then. Yeah, oh, I was okay. coming out of Maryland. So when I left DC after my, the beginning of the walk's a little jumbled up, but once I leave DC, I take the, walk up the whole CNO canal and mm-hmm. like through the Allegheny Passage up to Pittsburgh. So mm-hmm. it's like 300-400 miles of trail walking pretty much. And so he met me in one of the kind of hiker biker towns, which is also where the Appalachian Trail mm-hmm. comes through. And so he just drove down from Philly where he lives. And
okay. He's a Philly guy.
Yeah. And he brought me some beers and just gave me, he was like his hope was to give me moral support.
Yeah. Yeah. And see, like that even shows you that he came to see you and he was wanted to be helpful. But I really like that shift in the film, in the narrative of it, where it's just like, I'm Jessica and I'm going to walk. And then it's like, hey, don't fucking do it. If you want to quit, just quit this shit and get on with your life. I'm not going to talk about, well, technically, I mean, there's three, but I look at Gary as just like, it's fucking people,
Yeah.
And then the second one, I don't want to spoil. So I'm not going to talk about that. I don't want to talk about basically what I'm telling you. So you don't have to bring it up. And the listeners, I'm not bringing up Arkansas.
Okay.
Because I think that's a really nice shift in the film too. What, like, other than like people being concerned about people, because there's a couple guys that are telling you like, hey, be careful and XYZ, did you encounter any wildlife that was kind of, yeah, you mentioned having bear spray, but did you encounter any bears or any?
The bear spray was literally for humans. That's what the bear spray was for. I wasn't really anywhere where I would encounter a bear, but I did, like, there was other just like snakes, spiders, some raccoons at some point, like, tore into my tent and there was like blood, and I still don't know what happened with that.
Not your blood, but their blood.
Right. I'm assuming. Okay, good. Yeah. Someone's blood at this campground. And but the bear spray was, that was pretty much for people. the great American predator.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, what did you learn about America that you didn't know before this trip?
I mean, I think some things were reaffirmed. I think the overall sense that I had was that we all just want the same thing. Like, people just want the same thing. They just want to like live and work and provide for their families. And like, that's what people want to do. Yeah. And you know, I joke about it in the film, but it was interesting how I'd be in one town and then, you know, they'd be complete strangers that are giving me a place to stay or maybe pulling over just to like check on me or whatever. And they would always like warn me about the next town. Like, everyone was like warning me about other people. Like, meanwhile, like, they're a complete stranger, you know?
Yeah.
So it did kind of, you know, there were some fragments that you see, and I don't know. The one thing I realize is that there's definitely food deserts in this country. Like, when you're walking through certain areas and you, like, I would go hundreds of miles without a grocery store, you know, like there would be a Dollar General store, but like, you couldn't find produce
in Mexico
when I was going through there. Like, I couldn't find produce. Like, you just, yeah, there's like a Dollar General and like whatever. And then you're just walking for hundreds of miles before you would get to another Dollar General or something.
Wow. So no, not even any Walmarts?
No, nothing like that. Yeah. And then, any city, like if you go 30 minutes outside of any city, you're in the middle of nowhere. That's also what I learned.
Mm-hmm.
And just how, I mean, freaking expansive our country is, you know? But yeah, mostly I think what I really gathered was just how similar we all actually are. I mean, as cheesy as that sounds, but
no, that, it's true. You're right.
That we have, like our differences are actually what we have in common. And our country's just, you know, it's a weird patchwork, and people are isolated in some places, and the information that people get, you know, I just feel like so much is information, right? And I mean, when I was in Arkansas, one of the families I stayed with, this kid Levi, he's 19. He asked me, he was like, "Do they have John Wayne in other states?" I was like, "Yeah." He was like, "What about Clint Eastwood?" I was like, "Yes, they do. Do you have the internet?" I don't know. Like, but their family was so amazing. Gave me an awesome place to stay. We had deer jerky. It was great. But what? Like, that was just like, I don't know. There's just, I mean, this is a big, big ass country. And there's a lot going on outside of cities. And some of it was, you know, really cool and beautiful. And I mean, maybe I'm just an optimist, but, or like see things with rosy hue, but I really loved every part of the country that I went through. And I thought there's so many interesting places and people. And I wish we didn't have so many guns, but other than that, I don't know. I'm rambling.
No, that's what you do on a podcast. I asked you a question, you gave me a good answer. That's what usually happens on a podcast.
Yeah, it was definitely reaffirming, you know, and the kindness of strangers. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was, all different kinds of people, you know, and sometimes just the most unexpected ways people were there to help me out, give me places to stay and food and money, or just checking in on me. And it was definitely reaffirming in the kindness of strangers, for sure.
And there were certain moments in the film where I kind of want to talk around it, but I still think it's valuable to the conversation we're having. When you had to there were moments where you had to stop your journey and tend to family business. And then what I would call it now in this day and age, some self-care. How did you go back? How did you reset? Did you reset from a different area, like from where you left off? How did you do that?
It just depends. The only time where I didn't reset really was when my nephew was born and I went down to Tennessee, because I hadn't planned on going through Tennessee, like exactly in the way that I did. So I decided to start from Nashville and walk west that way.
Gotcha.
So that was a shift that I made. Most of the other, and then when I did a casino gig in New Mexico was another shift down that I made to get to this casino gig. And then I started walking from there. Mostly that was also weather wise. It was starting to snow in that area. So like going a little bit further south was helpful.
Oh, good. Yeah.
I mean, there were shifts and starts and stops, and in the end, you know, I traveled over 2,000 miles, and that was the journey by foot. Yeah.
7 months?
It was 8 months gone. Yeah.
Okay. And how was the stand-up? There's a couple moments. You did the, what's the name of the cafe? The big, is it the broadcast, Big Broadcast?
Oh, it closed actually. Oh. Sadly. I know. It's one of East Nashville's old spots, Radio Cafe.
Okay.
And it got pushed out a while ago, and then they reopened it. And then I think it just never got legs again. But Radio Cafe was a cool spot in East Nashville for a long time.
And that's where you did your, I'm assuming your hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love how you did that, how you kind of spliced it in throughout the piece. Talk about the stand-up. Let's close with like talking about the stand-up, doing it across the country.
Yeah, you know, I think that was another one of the inspirations, was like, oh, this is going to give me so much material. Mm-hmm. And that's not how it worked, you know? At least, like you were just talking about earlier, getting back on stage.
Yeah.
As soon as I got on the road, I was like, I need to be talking about street signs or like whatever.
Yeah.
Camping gear. I don't know. Like, I don't know what I thought was going to be so hilarious. So I was trying to write new material and do new material, and that wasn't very fun, you know, like kind of the last thing. Well, I don't know. You think that you have all this time, right? Like I'm literally just walking for like 10 hours a day. So you're just alone with your thoughts. I'm like, I mean, this is a great time to write jokes, but like, that's not how our minds work. So it took some time after I got back, which is the original idea that I had as far as the special goes. And I mean, that's how we have to build, right? It's rocky and then it grows. And so it, I feel like, again, the same with like my camera skills and even just me being better as a walker. I do start to build a little bit towards the end of the walk, but, getting material was definitely like one of the inspirations for doing the walk. And then you're kind of the last thing you want to do after walking 15 to 20 miles a day is going to, you know, this bar show and working on some new bits. But, you know, like it always does, it felt good to get on stage. And that was another cool way to meet people and have a little, you know, sense of community in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And comedians were a way that I used to find places to stay. I don't think you can do this anymore, but on Facebook, you used to be able to like search your friends, like based on where their hometown is. And so I would, you know, and on Facebook, you know, it's like 5,000 comedians that I don't actually know, but you know,
yeah,
or like 4,500. And, but I would reach out to strangers if we were Facebook friends and be like, hey, if they were from some rogue small town, and be like, do you know someone whose yard I can camp in? Or, you know, or do you know anyone that runs shows here? So it just kind of was a snowball effect in some ways. And there were so many fun towns. You know, I thought I was doing great. Looking back at the footage, you know, you were like, oh, okay, you kind of bombed. But, you know, we have to tell ourselves these things to keep going.
It's interesting because there were two moments in the film where like the casino gig was one, the main one, but then there was one where I just fucking felt for you when you were at the club, and it looked like it was mainly a black club or a little venue where
it was an event basically for me.
Okay. Oh shit. Okay.
So it was actually like more of a party and ended up being a super fun night.
Yeah.
And we kind of utilized that footage in that moment to capture like the feelings that I was going through then. Yeah. And I definitely felt like, oh my gosh, these people were so awesome to me. And I hope it doesn't look like in the film that, that particular set wasn't great, but I did do stand up there with that same crowd like the next night. And it was like the most fun.
Okay. Show. Well, that's, yeah, because I was like, oh my God, because that girl that tried to take a selfie with you, I was like, oh.
Yeah, it was more like a just like a hipster like fun crowd. And they were like, and yeah, it ended up actually being a really fun time. And two of the people, Ben and Kyle, who set it up, were like great friends now.
Okay, because the score changed and I was like, oh fuck. Again, I was like, oh shit. Yeah, that didn't feel, but the casino gig, I was like, when I saw that, I was like, you know what? It's some nights you can have a really good time at a casino, and other nights it's like, was that a night, a late show? Was it a nighttime show?
It was a nighttime show.
Okay. Because sometimes they're hit or miss.
Yeah.
They're hit or miss. Like the age demographic, when I was watching, I was like, yeah, you shouldn't feel that bad. And then you cut to you like on a bridge. I was like, Jessica, no, don't do it. Don't jump. Like you're, I was like, it's just a casino gig. Don't end it for that.
No, like after that, you know, I was definitely like, ready to get back on the road. Like,
yeah,
because you are with my thoughts.
New Mexico is how far? Like, you're almost there. Like, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting into the more like expansive West, you mm-hmm. know, which I loved. Like, that was kind of what I had maybe envisioned for the walk, of just this like wide open spaces kind of thing, you know, where I would just walk until the sun went down and put my tent up on the side of the road. Like, that was pretty interesting, cool way to live for, you know, that month or so that I was in New Mexico and Arizona also, and then into California.
What was your lowest point on the trip that you really like doubted yourself, and, you know, obviously you overcame it, but what was one of your lowest points?
Well, this wasn't a low point. Like, I didn't think I was going to finish, cause it was almost toward the end, and it's in the film as well. But like right when I get to California, and I know I'm just a few days from the coast, all of a sudden I started having really like super anxiety, and I couldn't sleep, which hadn't not been a problem for me at all. Cause you know, you're like exhausted physically at the end of the day. And I started feeling really anxious, and, you know, I say it in the film, I say, I feel like I didn't give it my all or whatever. I feel like, and so it's like, I've come all this way, you know, started, kept going. I'm almost here. And I'm still like being hard on myself about feeling like I'm half-assing it, you know? Mm. And it's like that, what is it, like imposter syndrome or whatever, you know, where we just like, even now I feel like with completing the film, you know, there's still, yeah, could have done this, could have done that, you know? And that was a moment of realization that aha feeling, you know, or the warnings that people have been giving me about the end and, you know, the Dans of the walk, that they were right. And that I probably wasn't going to, finish this thing and just feel like amazing, you know? And it did feel good in the moment. Like, I mean, to finish something like that and go to the water and like hop in, you know, it did, like, you take a moment and you appreciate like the amazingness of that and be proud and like pat yourself on the back a little bit.
Sure.
But then you come back to New York and you're back to life and it's, you know, the next step of this project, and there was definitely like a depression that happened after that, which I didn't realize at the time. It took like distance from it to be like, oh, I think I was depressed is what was happening there. Like, going on something like this walk and changing your life up, your day-to-day life, where, you know, all you're having to think about is where am I going to eat? Where am I going to sleep? And am I going to get, do all that safely? And those are your big worries of the day. You know, everything else, all the other stresses just don't seem so intense anymore, you know? And then when you come back to New York or back to, you know, wherever figuratively, you, it's bam, like it's all back and it's all real. And there is something that happens on those kind of adventures where, you know, you unlock into a different way of living. And the goal is to retain, you know, those, that feeling and that knowledge that you gain and like bring it into the new world with you, but it doesn't always seamlessly work out that way, you know?
Yeah. There's some really like, God, I, you know, because I want people to really see this, it's just like, there's some moments that I, as you're talking, that I'm thinking about, like probably one of my favorite moments is the cemetery, the scene where you're in the cemetery.
Yeah.
And the way that you talk about something is just like, oh shit. Yeah. That's really, yeah. And then I'll tell you after we're done recording, but yeah, there was some really great, great moments in this where it, that are just kind of like unexpected. And even though we know that you're, you know, from somebody who's a comic that has followed your journey through Instagram, we know that you got through it, but there's some oh shit moments that are still really compelling emotionally, even though you're a comic and you're going through what you're going through. And it's a very, I don't want to say that it's just a slice of life piece that's just kind of like, but there's some harrowing moments where it's like, fuck.
Yeah, you know, when we were watching the footage back, like the hundreds of hours that I got, we started watching it and I'm like, every time I would like set up the camera or whatever, I wouldn't say anything, you know, and I had, I was just like, we're watching it and I'm like, say something, do something.
Okay.
But then I was realizing in these moments that like, you know, and then the more you learn about filmmaking and I'm dive down that whole road, but just how much more of these moments of silence or just these small moments, like in the cemetery where like, I'm not like, so today I walked from here to here, you know, like, which not that that's how I wanted it to be, but I definitely, and watching the footage the first time around, I didn't fully connect with how those moments really are like genuine moments of me not knowing what the fuck to say or, you know, and just really being in that moment and kind of forgetting what the camera's there for or like of an audience. It was very much like, a journal almost, you know, of just... Mm-hmm. And it wasn't, filming and picking up the camera, it's not easy. Like, you know, it's not exactly what you want to be doing. And while you're like walking 20 miles a day, you know? In the end, like seeing the moments that were captured, it's real, you know?
I wanted to ask you like, who makes... If you could be sponsored, like who makes the best walking shoes?
Well, I wore Sportiva and they were pretty great. And
I saw you rocking a Patagonia jacket.
I did have a, yeah.
Is it really warm? Is it warm? Is it?
It's all about the layers.
Yeah.
So I had a lot of layers and I also, I was a little cautious of how I was dressing. Like I always wore pants. I never wore shorts just cause I don't know. Like I just wanted to look kind of, you know, like I kind of looked like a Boy Scout on the road or something. I don't know. I was like a lot of layers and you want to cover up your body anyways, cause you're like in the sun all day.
Right.
But I was very much about like business, you know, I was like protected and wasn't thinking about style.
Oh yeah. No.
Clear just him the footage,
but just like comfort wise, like stuff that's why I asked, like the best walking shoes and the
I don't know, I've only tried a couple, but they all seem to everything seemed to work out well. I had a great warm sleeping bag because when I got west, definitely the nights got below freezing. It's all about the layers.
And what about like other technical things as far as like just things that you learned to deal with, like challenges that you had? You know, you talked about the camera. Talk about a couple other things too, like the challenges that you had to overcome, you know, fulfilling your daily needs and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, not knowing where you're going to sleep every night is a stressful feeling. And as much as I am a really like social person and like meeting new people and like clearly like putting myself, you know, in interesting circumstances.
Sure.
It's still overwhelming and intimidating to like roll up into a town and not know where you're going to lay your head at night. So that was always a challenge, or like deciding if I was going to stealth camp. So learning how to stealth camp, which, you know, is just like camping where not at a campground. That was challenging for me because it felt like really vulnerable. And that was definitely like one of the more technical things that if I ever did something like this again, I'd be probably do a lot more of, because in the end it was actually like the, you know, the easiest, actually the easiest thing to do, because you're not, well, it's cheap and you're just like wanting to, you have to get up before the sun gets up so that people don't see where you're sleeping. So it's just like the most efficient way, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I had done a lot of research leading up to it, and I feel like that definitely helped with the gear that I had. You know, I had researched all the gear pretty well. So, you know, my camp stove and like what kind of food I would have. I carried oil, like olive oil with me that I would add to all my food just to like add calories to things. And yeah, just like, I had never hiked or camped by myself. Right. So all of that was new for me. And kind of navigating that world of like, yeah, well, how do you live on the road like that?
Yeah.
And also like immediately when I started walking, I started sending stuff home from my cart that I was like, well, why do I have this? Why do I have that? You know, you start really looking at your gear and what you have, but obviously I was traveling with more than most hikers have. You know, I had a computer and a camera and hard drives and like sound equipment and a microphone, a comedy microphone that I carried with me all the way across the country. And I don't think I ever needed once. So yeah, all of those things were like had a little bit of a learning curve.
What about, and lastly, what did you learn about Jessica Watkins?
Well, she's kind of a badass.
I would agree.
I learned, I'm like kind of like the little engine that could or something. Like I learned that I'm really strong, like physically I'm very strong. And I grew up being an athlete and I enjoy being like fit, like walking and doing physical things, but having your body get that strong, like towards the end, it feels really empowering. Just like I gained like 15 pounds of muscle, you know, while I was doing it, that feels really empowering. So I think I learned that I'm strong and not just physically, but, mentally too. And that I can, if I just keep, you know, if you just keep at something, even if it's not how you pictured it and it's not perfect. And if you just keep going and also, give, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, it's, I really learned a lot about giving into the unknown, and it's still something that I struggle with now, but all of the moments where I didn't know where I was going to stay and I didn't know what was going to happen and I gave into the unknown and just went with it. I mean, the most serendipitous, cool things would happen. I mean, like you see in the film, I Meet That Guy, hashtag Jesse, you know, he's was walking across America. Now he's biking across America. I was dreading getting on this freeway for like a week leading up to it. I knew I was going to have to walk on this super busy freeway for at least a few miles because there's usually a frontage road that goes beside those big highways that you can walk on. And I'd walked down a lot of interstates and stuff, but this was like a big one. Anyways, but instead of trying to navigate, like, I knew I just had to do it. Like, I just have to go. And right before I get on the freeway, this guy comes out of nowhere, you know, kind of like a freaking angel. And it, yeah, it felt like every time I really gave into that, the universe was like there to catch me. And it was a pretty cool experiment.
Well, Jessica, this has been great. I really love the movie. I think everybody should go see it.
Thank you.
And it's an incredible thing that you did. If you want to pitch the movie to the listeners.
Yes. So the film is Jessica Watkins, Specialish, not to be confused with the Capital Insurrectionist, Jessica Watkins. So the film is streaming it on demand now. You can find it on demand on like cable and satellite TV, or it's at a bunch of places digital, Amazon, iTunes, Vudu, Google Play, Xbox, and
YouTube.
And YouTube. And probably some other one, Vimeo on demand as well. And if you have trouble finding it, I think if you just put Jessica Watkins comedian, it'll probably be also the first thing that comes up. So my website is jessicawatkinscomedy.com. And you can also find me on Instagram or the other social media sites at @JessicaWatkins. That's me.
Jessica, thanks again for spending time with me.
Thank you for having me.
Really appreciate you. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will talk to you. Well, I will talk to you next time. Take it easy, everybody.